We had a, I call a stone puller, come along, hitch the tree and pull them on out. They didn't go in deep enough, so they couldn't quite drive out, we pull them out. And so he says, I told you not to stop, you idiot. He said, we figured going across, they wouldn't have time to break, they would have. So anyway, they went down through, and the mailman come up, so we drove right around through the Harleys, drove around through the front lawn, back and drove it on up. And George Sawyer down there, he hauled them out in the cans. He come up about noon, 1 o'clock, and we were digging across the road, and he parked the truck in front of the barn. It's right there by the road, you know. And so I'll come up later in the day, he says, we'll get done. And by 5 o'clock, we had the down filled up and into the thing, and that's all the traffic we had all day. That was in 46.
That's amazing. Gosh. You wouldn't
stand a chance.
You have a little more trouble today.
Oh, yes. Even here, we have more cars go by here in an hour at times than we'd have all day there. In fact, sometimes more than that go by in 5 minutes, and they go a lot faster.
Breakneck speed.
That's there. Oh, just that little side road is down in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be the Russell, I think it was the Russell place.
Yeah.
And this is a family. They all had big families. And you cut across here, you could, before they all grew up, you could look from here and down and see the place.
Is that right?
And they had four fireplaces in it.
Gee.
And an old fellow that lived there a few years ago, he, had papers and stuff. I was down there one time, and it caught fire and burned.
Mm.
But I remember when I was, it was out in, Montpelier, we come out blackberry,
mm-hmm.
and you go out in the day's time, you get 3 or 4 milk pails full of blackberries, and they were growing up there. Then the back farm been abandoned. We used to walk just a few minutes walk from where my father, my uncle Billy John Maxwell lived. They come out, father come out, some fellow named McCarty, and he was a clerk at what's this Summers Hardware out there, and he worked for the old Summers that had died some years ago, and. They come up here, and I remember we had a thunder shower, and I went in there and they started firing one of the fireplaces to get dry.
Wow.
And keep warm. That had to be back in the early 20s.
Well, it looks like
I have to threaten to. John McCoy is up here. That's all our pasture for this place.
Mm-hmm.
Way up, there's a. Just a few trees and an old shed across the road, usually for just a shed and to boil a sap in. It had about 300 trees they could tap. It's all for home use because it was small. And father said, about daylight, they come out and look up there and see the old fellow come down across. He come down, and I don't know if he had breakfast or not, but they have dinner and supper and stay all day, sat on the porch, and visit. He'd go back up and they wouldn't see him again for about 6 months. About twice, 3 times a year, he'd come down and spend the whole day, and he'd go back up there. And then they had the bear of the bush place up past that. And they said when he come out, he'd just hibernate practically for the winter in there. But he got pneumonia come out, they said that when he come out and he spit blood, and he died of pneumonia. But he lived way back in there. They call it bear of the bush place. It's way up into that road.
And his name was?
Well, his last name was Baird, but this fellow's name was McCoyne.
Uh-huh.
And it's just out a short ways on the upper side of the road where they used to be. There's 2 farms there, but I never knew what the other farm was.
Well, you said that you used to have a sheep pasture.
Yeah.
So did your grandfather raise sheep?
Yeah. They put them out there in the spring of the year, about once a week or 2 weeks, they go out and check on them.
Now, were these merinos, or were they...
I don't know, just a sheep part of...
Yeah.
You know, if I said they're sheep, I never asked him. There's 27 acres there.
Gosh.
And they used to keep there, and nothing ever bothered them. Everything...
No coy dogs, or...
No, and they didn't... The farm dogs didn't chase them the way they do today. And they did, they'd been shot. And they'd leave them there for the summer. Well, back in 1950... Farley built a little house. I went out and it was just after the war, 49, right along in there. It was built, I think, 1950. It's a little white house, a picket fence on the loop road there. And he's carpenter, he built it. And the house is surprisingly large. You can get in, right up, looks like outside. Everybody used to go, man, now he, you know, used every inch of it pretty well. And he and I cut and skid the logs down by the blue spruce lodges now. And Moriarty's truck come up down there and set it up. And all the rough, most of that house is built of rough lumber to come off there. And it all grown up, so they're big enough for good spruce and stuff like that to build his house out, you know.
Yeah.
But he lost a lot of it because the wind got in there and knocked over quite a number of thousand feet, and he didn't know about it because he's out working, didn't come up there. And by the time he got the worms stuff going in, so he lost a lot of it. And now it's all grown up and they built houses out there. But that 27 acres is grown from a sheep pasture up to trees, you know, about like this. Well,
yeah, it happens very fast.
It's been another 40, 50 years since he's been. And this has been 40 years, or better than 40 years. Those were planted in, I think, 35, around 35, 40. And like I said, you can look up across and look over on the other hill over there. And they were practically there. Now it's all grown up. You can barely see the blazes. We could look up on the German road there. And that, up through there is all, well, growing up the brush was open.
Now the German Flats Road, that was the Irish place anywhere near that?
Their place is just below where the Sugar Bush Hotel is.
Okay.
I think they call it Book Place, and it was up in there for
yeah,
half
I know
a mile
what
or so.
You mean.
And plus that day, but that's where they were. And after war, I hate that. And it was, you know, it wasn't as bad. There wasn't that much brush. I mean, it was, and it had a real good spring just above where the house was. The house is still up. I think the barns were gone. I don't remember the barn, but I remember the house. And I broke my hand. So I had a cousin of mine, at least about a second cousin or something, to help me. And he got to complain about asthma and stuff. That, and he couldn't do anything. We had a couple of hand sides there. We used to trim around, you know, they don't leave the way they do today. So I got kind of mowing, and that broke my hand over again anyway. But I used it, and you know, just hard to heal. And when I got done, we got done hand there, I was missing, sorry, I had two of them. And so first thing I noticed this last two or three years, I found a side three there. Well, after about 8-10 years, I got thinking about it. I said, I know what I did. I left it hanging up in the tree there, just above the spring. And a little small, I don't know, apple tree or something, a small tree. No, I said, I know that's where the side went. I told Cleston that, but I don't think they went far too much. But I know that was up to us, because it's 40 years ago. But I know that was the one.
Oh, that's funny. Well, you sure have been great. And I must say.
Well, there's my father and a fellow named Floyd Wimble, who never worked in the woods before. They were working up on this bank, and there had a lot of brush, and snow was deep that year, about 4 foot deep. We had to shovel down around the trees, you know, before we get it. No chainsaws, all axe and crosscut saw. And they were standing in the brush and that, cutting off this maple log. My father told me, he said, better move on the other side. I said, well, I'm all right here. So they cut it off, and started rolling. The fellow standing in this brush, he couldn't get away. My father grabbed the log and held it, kind of wrenched his back, so he stopped it, and they rolled the fellow back up. And it probably wouldn't hurt him probably too much because they'd roll over all that brush and stuff in that 4 foot. But it, we had to roll it back off him anyway to get him out. And a few minutes later, Carl Long come up. He had a horse that he got off his farm and he used to skid logs out. And my Uncle Albert Lavanley and I were working together. And we were cutting a big spruce that really went up, must have been practically a virgin timber. It's a real tall one. My uncle told Carl, he said, you better stay back with the horse. He can't tell just where this is going to go. And
these crumbs Carl, all the way here.
Well, 20, 30 feet away, probably about 30 feet, he stopped there. And we cut the spruce off and it was falling up on the bank. Get out of the way. And when it did, it hit a birch tree. And the birch had a big knob on it, fat. I slid down the birch, hit that knob, and the buck kicked up into the air over our head. And let it swing in there. And we didn't know how to run. It was right over our heads, swinging back and forth. We stood there to see where it was going to go. And finally slid down on that knob. And just skinned across the horse, enough so it made the horse buck a little bit. Across its back, went right into the ground, rolling in, well, over a foot. The ground was soft underneath the snow. And dove in there, but for some reason the rest of that tree held on that knob. It come down and killed the horse and broke its back right there. And but we didn't know how to run. I mean, there was all of us right there. No one dared to run, just stay there and watch to try to duck it when it come down. But the back went on over, and so we got that tree down. And there was Uncle Lyme's lemon, another tree had already fallen off the side of it. And I was lemon, my uncle was, but he's up a little further up than I was. And so we were staying out each other's way. And I felt something hit me on the knee, so I thought it was a big chip. Right down my, from my leg. Uncle said, "That hit you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "We're quitting." He said, "Right now." He said, "It's about 20 minutes, 4:30. We usually work to 5. He says, "It's been about 3 accidents in the last half hour." And he says, "Spritting everybody, oh no, it's got injured, killed." He said, "We're quitting right now." Carl hung a little reluctant to quit, but we all did quit. And what was my uncle's double-bitted axe? It flew out of his hand. He lost all his fingers, except his thumb, in a mill accident down the Moriarty's mill. And with the snow on his mittens and that, he lost it. It slipped. His axe just flew back and hit me. A little bit of the axe hit me on the, right by the knee, right side of the knee. But it didn't hit, the blade didn't hit. It was just the end of the axe.
That was
so
moment.
We all quit early that day.
And this same uncle lost his...
He lost his fingers down the Moriarty's mill.
When was that? Later, after that?
That was before that. This was afterwards when he was working in the woods. But before that, he'd been working in the mill and lost them. And it was mud time. And as I remember it, Paul Moriarty died a few years ago. He was working as far as he led the mill. But he drove my uncle out, and they lost all fingers. And they had a pint or something to get in the car. So they wrapped his hand in a towel and drove from Montpelier to Eaton Hospital. On the way, kill pain or something. My uncle had a couple pretty good slugs of that whiskey. They put him on the operating table and used ether in those days. And ended up, they took about 6 doctors and nurses and that, and they had to strap him down because the ether wasn't taking effect. And he was coming to try to get set up.
Oh, God. Ah, that's incredible. Well...